Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome back to another edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, live from the Auto Forum Studios, middle of the week. And we have plenty of local sports to dive into today, as well as national sports. We're going to continue our coverage, previewing the high school football weekend final game of the regular season for teams throughout the 3A classification. State playoffs will begin next week. And if you're unfamiliar with the format of the state tournament, if you're a number one or number two seed in the region, you do not play next week. You get a bye. Three plays six, four plays five from the two regions. And so the Carbon Dinos and the Emory Spartans both still with an opportunity to get to the four spot, which means they would in fact play host to a state tournament game. We'll talk about the scenarios and also preview Emory's contest with Grantsville. Coach John Famalo is scheduled to join us next segment. We talked Carbon High School football yesterday. And of course, if you missed it, you can head on over to CastleCountryRadio.com, click on the Drive Time Sports link, podcast on demand anytime you want it, Drive Time Sports and individual interviews. But we will talk some high school football. That's coming up a little bit later on in the show today. Now, let's talk some of the national sports headlines, and we will begin with the NBA. Less than a week away from the regular season, I can't let you forget, you can listen to the Utah Jazz all season long once again right here on KOAL. But the Jazz aren't necessarily the big storyline in the NBA. Right now, throughout the preseason, there's been two. And I mentioned this yesterday. LeBron in L.A., Jimmy Butler in Minnesota. And the Jimmy Butler situation gets stranger by the day. In fact, today, during a scrimmage, which happened to be the first time that Jimmy Butler has practiced with his team in Minnesota since demanding a trade, things got a little heated. He was screaming at general manager Scott Layden. He was yelling at individual players, Andrew Wiggins, Karl Anthony Towns, basically telling them that he's better. You bleeping need me, he kept telling Scott Layden throughout the practice. Jimmy Butler sat down with ESPN after practice. He was asked on if the stories were true, and he said yes.
A lot of it's true. A lot of it is true. But you got to think, I haven't played basketball in so long. And I'm so passionate, and I love the game, and I don't do it for any other reason except for to compete and go up against the best to try to prove that I can hang. So all my emotion came out at one time. Was it the right way to do it? No. But I can't control that when I'm out there competing. Like, that's my love of the game. That's raw me. Me at my finest. Me at my purest. That's what you're going to get inside the lines.
Again, the Jimmy Butler situation in Minnesota just gets stranger by the day. He's still a member of the Timberwolves. Trade talks have picked up once again between Minnesota and Miami. At least that's what's being reported. To me, it's really simple. At this stage, Butler is doing everything he possibly can to make the situation in Minnesota so toxic that the Timberwolves have no choice but to trade him. That's what he's doing. If he's showing up, the team can't withhold his paycheck. They can fine him, but they can't withhold his paycheck. He knows this. He's trying to make the situation so toxic that they move him before the season starts. He doesn't want to be in Minnesota. And to me, really, it's kind of disrespectful on Jimmy Butler's point. You know, he was talking about that's him. That's really the way he is. Look, that is not the way Jimmy Butler is. He's never had that reputation going back to his days in Chicago. He's always been the quiet all-star. Not a superstar, but a quiet all-star. Great two-way player. Great defender. He'll lock you down on the perimeter. He can score 21, 22 points on any given night. That's the Jimmy Butler that we know, but he's quiet. He's trying to make the situation toxic. He wants out. He's a free agent at the end of the season. and he has his eyes on LA. Not necessarily the Lakers with LeBron, but there are reports that he wants to play for that other team in Los Angeles and the Clippers. It's really that simple. It's a situation that just gets more bizarre by the day. Let's take a look at some of the other headlines in the national sports front. The UFC has lined up a rematch for UFC 230. Everybody's going to be talking about 232, excuse me. Everybody's going to be talking about 229 for quite some time with Conor McGregor and Khabib and the way that went down. But the promotion officially booked John Jones against Alexander Gustafsson for UFC 232, which will take place December 29th. It will be in Las Vegas at T-Mobile Arena. The fight is slated for the lightweight heavyweight title. Current lightweight heavyweight champion Daniel Cormier, who is also the heavyweight champion, is expected to be stripped of the title once this fight happens. The scheduled event, again, will also feature, and this is at T-Mobile Arena, it will also feature a women's featherweight title match. Should be a good pay-per-view. Chris Cyborg against Amanda Nunes. So there is some good stuff coming up in the UFC once again, I guess, to kind of make us forget about 229. It's not going anywhere. And again, I said this yesterday, and since we're talking about the UFC, I'm going to point this out one last time. Dana White's not going to strip Khabib of his title. He may give some self-imposed sanctions, because if the Nevada State Athletic Commission doesn't do anything, Dana White's not going to do anything. He may be under pressure to do something, but he's not, because he loved what happened last week. Loved it this past weekend. Loved it. And he's absolutely going to use that to piggyback a huge pay-per-view event. That's what's really happening right now in the UFC. However, I am definitely curious to see what John Jones looks like as he goes up against Gustafsson late December. Let's move over to Major League Baseball. Last night, the Boston Red Sox punched their 11th trip in franchise history to the American League Championship Series. And I'll tell you, the final four for Major League Baseball is as good as it has ever been. 6 months, 162 regular season games, a couple of tiebreakers in the National League, and we are now down to the final four in Major League Baseball. The bracket for the American League feels like it's been set for quite some time, hasn't it? Almost felt like we were on a collision course for the Red Sox and the Astros halfway through the year, and the AL did not provide a lot of drama. It really didn't. We knew who the five playoff teams were going to be quite a while ago. But now we're set to go. We know who the final four are going to be. If you missed it last night, the New York Yankees ousted by the Red Sox in four games. The Yankees made it interesting, trailing 4-1 going into the bottom of the ninth inning. Gleyber Torres had an opportunity to be a hero at Yankee Stadium. Yanks trailing 4-3. A little hit down third base. Could not beat the throw, and the Red Sox clinch a spot in the ALCS.
And Kimbrel deals 1-2. Breaking ball is grounded weakly to third. Nunes fields, fires, and it is in time for the out. Ball game over. Boston wins. And Boston wins the American League Division Series 3-1.
It was a compelling game. It was a compelling series. And it only went four. And really, when you take a look at the NL and the ALDS, the Astros had no problem with the Indians. The Indians rolled over and died. I mean, it was a terrible performance in Game 3. The Astros, I still say they're the best team in baseball. They took care of business against the Indians. In the National League, the Rockies, I think they were worn out. As we talked about earlier on in the week, they had to play a tiebreaker game in Los Angeles. They lost that. Then they had to go to Wrigley Field for a one-game wild card. They win that. And then they had to go on the road for two more games against Milwaukee, lost both of those, and then they were swept in Game 3. I think the Rockies just ran out of gas. All that, they got one home game out of all of that. And then the Dodgers and the Braves. The Braves put up a spirited effort. It's a young team that was ahead of schedule to begin with. They took one from the Dodgers, and they had the lead late in Game 4, but they couldn't keep up with the firepower of that roster. I was intrigued by that series, but at the end of the day, nobody was surprised by the Dodgers getting the win. And the Yankees stole one at Fenway. And that made me believe that with Severino on the mound in Game 3, the Yankees had a legitimate chance in this series. And again, I have said some things about the Red Sox. I don't buy them in the postseason. Track records typically do the math, and I'm talking about recent track records. Still don't think they have what it takes to beat the Astros. But for the lack of drama that the American and National League Division Series gave us, we're going to have a lot of it in the NLCS and the ALCS. Red Sox, Astros, Dodgers, Brewers. It'll get underway Friday night with the NLCS. Of course, we'll be talking more baseball in the coming days. But with that being said, we really don't have a lot happening as far as must-watch sports tonight. You have more NBA preseason basketball. We have a chance to watch LeBron James and Lonzo Ball play for the first time together tonight. I guess that's somewhat compelling, especially if you want to watch NBA basketball. The Jazz do not play tonight. Short slate of NBA games. We have 8 on tap. Doubleheader on national television. Indiana will take on the Bulls at 6 p.m., and then we get Golden State and the Lakers tonight at 8:30. That's about the extent of what's happening in the national sports front. We are on the eve of more NFL football. Week 6 begins tomorrow here on Drive or on KOAL. We'll be talking about it on Drive Time Sports. Tomorrow night, we get the Eagles and the Giants. Week 6 Thursday night football for you. We will talk some more NFL a little bit later on in the show. And if we get some time, more baseball. Because, again, I was very, very entertained by that game last night. I'm extremely excited for the AL and NLCS. We've got a break for just a moment. Local sports recap is coming your way, and again, we'll be joined by Coach John Famala with the Emory Spartans when we return. It's a Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with a high school soccer scene where yesterday the Emory Lady Spartans rolled past the Carbon Dinos 4-1 in the opening round of the 3A state championship tournament. The Lady Spartans were led by Alexis Winter. She found the back of the net not once but twice. Shelby Murdoch and Sophie Huntington also scored one goal to lead Emory to the victory and into the second round where they await their opponent. The first round of the 3A state tournament will continue today, and Judge Memorial will take on American Leadership Academy at 4 p.m. The winner will then move on to face Emory. In other 3A state championship action, today Richfield will take on Macer Prep. Juab will play host to Grantsville. Manti will battle Union. Providence Hall will travel on the road to meet Morgan. Summit Academy will meet Grand, and Delta will battle North Sam Pete. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll go over the first round results tomorrow during the local sports news segment. We move over to volleyball, and yesterday the Carbon Lady Dinos suffered a straight set loss to the Union Cougars at home. Carbon dropped the first set 25-20, the second 25-21, and the third 25-22 in what proved to be a very competitive matchup between the two squads. As we reach the twilight of the volleyball season, the Lady Dinos have just 1 week left of action, which will begin next week. As the current standings sit, Carbon is in third place, a half game better than Juab, and trailing Union by 2 games in the loss column. Carbon will return to the volleyball court on Thursday before wrapping up the regular season next Tuesday at home against Providence Hall. Thursday's contest is a road tilt with the Delta Rabbits. We move over to local MMA, and coming up on October 27th, Fierce Fighting Championship will return to the Carbon County Event Center as they play host to Fight for Hunger. This particular event is going to be nonprofit. All of the proceeds will go to Carbon Caring for Kids, a local charity that focuses on making sure children have food when they're away from school. On this particular card, there will be 4 local fighters, Mason and Holden Sorensen, Blanca Chavez, and Nick Teeny. These 4 individual local fighters will go toe-to-toe with opponents from out of the area, and it will also mark the second round of the Lightweight Grand Prix, which will feature Nate Kersley and Bobby King. Recently, on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Fierce MMA owner Cody Bunderson, and he talked about the upcoming event.
Fight for Hunger was a great theme. Really fell in love with the organization and what they were doing, and I thought it was a perfect fit for what we're doing. And so we teamed up, and we're going to put on this event and raise as much money as we can for Carbon Caring for Kids. You know, you take eating for granted. When you see actually how many kids within the county do on a daily basis, you know, struggle with hunger, it really makes you put things in perspective.
Tickets are on sale right now for both general admission and VIP. And remember, every penny will go towards Carbon Caring for Kids. You can buy your tickets right now at FierceFightingChampionship.com. And today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we will continue to preview the upcoming weekend for high school football. Plus, we'll take a look at the college ranks, where the University of Utah will actually return to the field this Friday. That'll be this afternoon on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, beginning at 4 p.m. on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You watch the games, you follow the team, you wear the colors with pride, and you have questions, and only one man can answer them. get the answers to the tough questions.
Live from the Auto Forum Studios, back on Tribe Time Sports, KOL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Wednesday edition of the show, we got to talk more high school football. Yesterday, we caught up with Coach Josh Huntsman of the Carbon Dinos. Today, let's talk Emory High School. Spartans right now 1-3. They've dropped three consecutive region games, and they have a chance to get off the snide Friday night right here on KOL. They'll take on the Grantsville Cowboys at home. It is senior night, and if the Spartans win, they have a chance to play host to a home playoff game. Really, if they lose, they have a chance as well. They just have to hope that Judge Memorial picks up a win over Carbon. That's the key. Emory will be rooting for Judge Memorial this Friday, to say the least. Joining us right now over the phone to talk about some playoff scenarios and the team itself, we have Coach John Famalo right now. Coach, a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate having me on, Jordan.
Coach, we'll start by talking about this past Friday's contest. I thought it was a very winnable game for this football team. I know you guys were a little undermanned. Injuries have definitely played a factor later on here in this season, but it was a home tilt with the Union Cougars. And in fact, you guys led at the end of the first quarter, trailed by seven going into halftime. The third quarter proved to be the difference. And I know the second half has kind of been where the woes have popped up for this team. But all in all, you guys played a competitive couple of quarters of football on Friday.
No, I mean, with the exception of giving up that play right before half, I mean, 27 seconds seems like we're infamous for doing that. You know, we could have went in 7-7 with the ball going into third quarter, which even when we had the ball in the third quarter, we got it on the five-yard line, and, you know, Tyson got a little banged up. We had two must snaps, and, you know, got 0 points out of that, and so that really hurt. And then, you know, after that, the tide kind of turned, and, you know, kids got tired. We had got a few more injuries, and so they just kind of took it to us in that third quarter. That's what hurt us.
I know the fatigue always sets in when you got to play Ironman football, but Coach, I can't help but feel that when you have a younger team and things start to go wrong in the second half, as you mentioned, having the ball inside of the 5-yard line, sometimes it brings in, I guess, the mindset of, well, here we go again, and it seems like other teams can kind of sense that. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, yeah, for sure, especially with the young kids we have. And so, again, if you don't put points on the board and you're on the defensive side and on short field, that just makes it tough for the defense and mentally. I mean, you know, that's where kids got to get tougher. And when you're young, that's hard to overcome. And so that's what we're trying to do, is get these kids mentally tough to overcome those hard times, because they are going to come, and they've been throughout the season. And, you know, sometimes we felt like we've battled through it, and other times we've kind of not done as well.
But with that also, I think, sparks optimism as well. I mean, we can talk about the Morgan game. I know you and I had a conversation about that. We're talking about the Union game, even the Carbon game. I mean, these are the three region losses, and there have been bright spots throughout these games. Morgan, you guys play tit for tat with what I'm going to call the best team in the 3A classification. You guys were right there with them through a quarter and a half before things started going wrong. Union, a team that's 3-1, I mean, realistically, they still have a chance for a 3A North championship, and you guys played right there with them. So, yeah, we could talk about the negatives, but at the same time, there are plenty of positives from these games as well.
Well, you always have to look for that for the kids to keep them upbeat. And like you say, at times we've looked really good. And again, against good competition, you talk about, you know, again, the Morgan game, you know, the first quarter and a half, we played pretty good. And Union game, first probably two quarters, with the exception of the last few seconds, we played with them. And so, you know, there's bright spots. But it seems like that second half, and part of it is, you know, we're young, and part of it is, you know, we have kids playing both ways, and we just kind of wear out, and teams can kind of wear us out. And so that's kind of where I've seen, you know, and when we get a little wore down and got kids playing both ways, especially in the trenches, that's, you know, that kind of wears on them.
Yeah, and I think one aspect that's not really ever talked about, Coach, because we just focus on the varsity level, but you have a lot of kids that can play sophomore JV as well. You have to rely on these kids to play varsity. I mean, it's kind of a juggling act for a coach. I think that's an overlooked aspect when you look at varsity football coaches.
Yeah, no, that's the balance you have to try to play. I mean, you have some sophomores that honestly could use some reps at JV to get a little bit of confidence. But if you play them at that JV level, then you play them on Friday. You know, now you're talking about, you know, do they have enough gas in the tank to be able to play another game, you know, on the day after. And so, off the balance you try to play, because you need them to get confidence as well as get the reps, but at the same time, you don't want to wear them out. And, you know, we've seen both sides of that spectrum, as we've allowed kids to play and then not let kids play. So, you know, that's a thing you battle with a young team all year.
There was no Zion Gibson in this game on Friday, Coach, and I know looking at the box score and going over some tape, you guys had to get a little creative as far as spreading out the touches so that Rance wasn't carrying the ball 35 times with touches out of the backfield as well as an extension of the pass game. You had to get creative with some carriers in this game.
Yeah, no, we stuck Jesse Barnett again, one of our key linemen, moved him back to running back, and a kid that played, running back his freshman and sophomore years, and actually was a real good running back. But with offensive changes and personnel and things, we felt like we needed him on the line. But he was a kid that stepped up this last week, and I thought he had a good game with touches. Again, try to get the ball out of our hands quick and quick passes with James and others, and so. I think it's a little bit of the same recipe this week as we deal with Grantsville.
It's funny when you mentioned Jesse Barnett, Coach. I can't help but think one of the kids that immediately comes to mind would be Meekum from about 5 or 6 years ago. It was a kid that you could kind of do it all. You could kind of rely on that kid to play any position that you needed to on the field. I mean, he went from playing on the line to playing fullback out of the wing tee. And I kind of view Jesse as that same special type of player, great football IQ that you can move around the field.
Yeah, and that's it. Jesse's a good athlete, and so you can put him a lot of different places, and he would succeed. And with the change of the offense, the way we did a little things, we didn't have as many running backs. We were a little bit trying to extend the pass a little bit, and so he found a home on the line and has done a phenomenal job this year. And so, but at the same time, you move him back to running back, and he picks up where he left off, as a junior or as a sophomore, and. Still has a good feel for that as well.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach John Famalo with the Emory Sport and Football Team. Coach, let's talk about Friday's matchup. It is a tough one. The Grantsville Cowboys, they deserve to be mentioned in the conversation as far as 3A state championship contenders. I think the 3A North, for as much parity as there has been, I think the dominance of the Morgan Trojans has been obvious. But at the same time, Grantsville, they're a good football team, and they're going to hit you in a different direction. Morgan wants to attack you through the air. But when you look at the statistics for the Grantsville Cowboys, Parker Thomas, he's gone for almost 1,700 yards and 22 touchdowns on the ground. That's video game type numbers. This kid's the real deal.
Yeah, no, he's a downhill runner, and he's not afraid to put his shoulder down, and he runs hard. Again, watched some film on him, and actually he played a little bit last year when we watched. A kid that's going to give us troubles if we don't stop his momentum in the backfield, because once he gets ahead of steam, he puts that shoulder down, and in the open field, he's got the speed to break away, so he's got a little bit of combination of both. But again, you got to get momentum stopped with him. He's not a really shifty runner. He's just a downhill. He'll make a move here and there, but once he's in the open field, and then he's got that speed. So he's got a pretty good combination.
He's averaging about 7 yards per carry so far this season, Coach. And I know it's not as simple as just sticking 8 men in the box, but what do you do defensively this week to try to force Grantsville to throw the football? Because that's where they're most vulnerable. If they're going to throw the ball, I mean, you take a look at touchdown to interception ratio, be it Jackson Samberger, Isaac Riding. I mean, they haven't had a lot of success throwing the football, and I believe that's the strength of this defense, your guys' secondary. So how do you try to force them to throw the football?
Like you say, we got to load the box. Honestly, we got to keep as many guys in the box. And, again, for him, they run a lot of, counter trap type plays. And so it's a matter of trying to get him stopped in the backfield before he gets a little bit of momentum going. And so, I thought we did that well against Union. Same type of thing. If we can get a little bit of penetration and getting them, get some hits at the line of scrimmage or behind, I think that helps where you can get a little bit more help. But, if you let him get into that second level, then that's where he becomes dangerous. And so that's the key for us, is not to let him get second level and try to get him stopped at the line of scrimmage as soon as we can.
One of the encouraging things, Coach, if we flip to the defensive side of the ball and we take a look at Grantsville, I'm just looking at points given up so far this season. I mean, they allowed 28 to Morgan, 17 to Union, 23 to Carbon, 21 to Judge Memorial. That tells me that you can move the football on this team. I've watched a little bit of tape on Grantsville. To me, they don't seem nearly as overpowering, especially up front, as a Morgan squad. And teams have had success. I mean, Carbon, I think it's a fair comparison, 23 points. Judge scored 21 on us. So, I mean, I guess when you take a look at it front to back, there's optimism as far as moving the football against this Grantsville team.
Yeah, I think we should have some success moving the ball. We just got to put points on the board once we get to the red zone. And so, again, it's a defense that, I think lends us to be able to run as well as pass. You know, they have a three-man front. They'll send one every now and then, but, you know, they're dropping eight to, you know, seven or six. And so for us, if we can run and establish that and then mix it up on the pass, you know, I think offensively we should be able to move the ball. It's just a matter of, hey, can we put points on the board? And that's one thing we struggled all year with. And so for us, that's our goal is, you know, anytime we get in the red zone, we need to put points on the board.
I've always felt that Rance, he appears to be more comfortable, Coach, running in between the tackles. I mean, and against a three-man front, I mean, that could play out into your guys' favor. Do you agree with that on Rance? I mean, he's more comfortable running inside the tackles?
Yeah, he is. He is. He's got a pretty good feel in there and, you know, not afraid to put his shoulder down as well. And so for us on a three-man front, you know, there's some natural bubbles there on a three-man front to be able to hit in between the tackles. And so, you know, that's the kind of stuff I think can attack. And if we can get him, same thing, if we can get him to second level, that's when he becomes dangerous.
You talk about running some of the bubbles. I take a look at the offensive options in general, Coach. And I know you and I have talked a lot about James Bowman, but I'm just so impressed with how dynamic this kid is and the steps that he has made. I guess the old saying is you will see the most growth in a kid from a sophomore to junior year. And I don't know what the senior year is going to bring for James, but I'll tell you, between sophomore to junior year, this kid impresses me.
Yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit for the kid. I mean, he's a great athlete. He's got all the tools to be a really good football player. Like I say, he's made some big strides this year and a kid that we've counted on, you know, to make big plays for us because we really don't have a lot of that. And so he's a kid that we're looking to continue to make plays not only this year, but, you know, the sky's the limit for him next year if we continue to put in the work. And, you know, so he's a great athlete. He can be a really good football player.
You and I always talk about injuries, Coach, at the end of the segment. I know you guys are beat up. Individually, if we talk about Kyson, I know he has been injured a couple of times throughout this season, but he appears set to go on Friday night, right?
Yeah. He's a gutsy player. I know he's been banged up, had his foot, had his back. There's been a lot of things, and, you know, he's taken some shots, but at the same time, he gets himself ready the next week. And, you know, I really appreciate that as a coach, that he's given me everything he has, and, you know, he's ready to go this week.
You've talked about some injuries that you guys will have in the trenches. How difficult is that next man up mentality? That's so simple to say. I mean, it doesn't matter if we're talking to a high school coach, a college coach, or a pro coach, next man up mentality. But when you only have 30 kids, I mean, that's tough.
Well, I mean, we're really thin on the line. We knew that going in, and that's, you know, our big worry was if, you know, we have an injury on the line, where do we go? And so, you know, I credit my coaching staff for trying to get a lot of these young kids ready, a lot of sophomores, and, you know, we're even now into the freshman group that we're having to look to the scrounge to get some linemen. But, you know, the kids are eager and ready to go. That's the one thing, you know, I've noticed from these kids, whether they're, you know, a sophomore or a freshman, and that, you know, they don't get that glazed look like, holy smokes, you really want me to, you know, play varsity football? They're like, hey, I mean, give me a chance. And so, you know, I appreciate that as a coach as well.
Well, Coach, I'm definitely looking forward to Friday's tilt. A lot of different scenarios that could play out. A win for Emory and a loss for Carbon. And there you have it. You get a home playoff game. I mean, a loss for Carbon, a loss for Emory. You may get a home playoff game due to the tiebreaker. Last week of the regular season, when you have so many other scenarios that could play out, makes for a lot of fun. Makes for fun scoreboard watching as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think everybody's going to be watching the scoreboard, see how everything ends up. And so for us, we just got to take care of our business. And, you know, at the end of the day, hopefully, you know, we get a little bit of help. And however it falls out. But, you know, our goals are still kind of in place if we get a little bit of help and we take care of what we can. And so, but like I say, the end of the year is always as a toss-up as to what can happen. And so that's kind of the fun of it. And so we're just excited we get a playoff game, and we just got to make the most of it.
No doubt. Coach, it's always a pleasure to talk football with you. Thank you again for the time, and best of luck on Friday.
All right. Hey, thank you, Jordan.
That's Coach John Famalo again of the Emory Sport and Football Team. Emory will take on the Grantsville Cowboys right here on KOAL, beginning at 6:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show, and then we get kickoff at 7. Don't forget, you can listen live online as well at castlecountryradio.com. Right-hand corner, you'll see a Sports Listen Live link. Just click on that. The online stream this year brought to you by Bill's Home Furnishings. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
Live from the KOAL newsroom at Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
Yeah!
We're back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM, live from the Auto Farm Studio. Talked about the lack of storylines in the NBA for preseason, which is kind of just floated under the radar. One thing that is somewhat enjoyable about the NBA preseason is when a team from overseas comes in and goes toe-to-toe with an NBA squad. And we got that last night. And of course, if you're a BYU fan, you paid attention to it because the Shanghai Sharks took on the Houston Rockets. No challenge for Houston. I mean, if you think defense in the NBA is bad, watch a couple of these teams from overseas. They play no defense at all. But if you're a BYU fan, you were watching because Jimmer Fredette was in town, and he played all 48 minutes of this game. Did not sit a single minute. And again, if you're a BYU fan, you probably follow Jimmer's production in Shanghai. He's pretty good over there. He's found his niche in that particular league. Last night, he brought over another familiar name, a Luis Scola. He played 40 minutes. Scola put up numbers that were okay. He had a double-double last night. I think he had 18 points, 12 rebounds. Jimmer, however, led Shanghai in scoring. He dropped 41. Cue the BYU fans taking to Twitter, taking to Facebook, complaining all over the state today that Jimmer should be in the NBA. You didn't watch the game if you seriously believe that this guy should be playing in the NBA today. There's a reason why he isn't. And one of the things I love about Utah sports is the loyalty that comes along with it. The Utah Jazz fans will argue with you until they are blue in the face that John Stockton is the greatest point guard of all time and that Karl Malone is the greatest power forward of all time. They will argue that to the death. And that's great. I don't agree with it, but I can appreciate the argument because I appreciate the loyalty. And that falls hand in hand with Jimmer Fredette. And when he has an opportunity to go up against an NBA team and you look at the box score and you say, well, Jimmer scored 41 points. This guy should be on an NBA roster. Doesn't tell the whole story. And I guess last night's game is also a reminder where if you chop up any highlights, everyone can look like a superstar. Jimmer's stat line last night, again, he played all 48 minutes. He did not sit. He shot 16 of 40 from the field. 16 of 40. 4 of 11 from deep. Scored 5 points at the foul line, and again, he had 41. He did have 9 rebounds. He did have 3 assists. His plus-minus ratio while on the court last night was minus 42. It was terrible. By far the lowest plus-minus ratio of anyone. And again, I get it. He played all 48 minutes, and they lost by 42 points. So his plus-minus ratio is going to be higher than anyone else, unless he got some garbage time minutes. Luis Scola played 40. His plus-minus ratio was 29. Jimmer wasn't good last night. And in comparison to what was on the opposite side of the court, James Harden, he scored 37 points. He took 18 shots. Okay, so let me run those numbers by you one more time. Jimmer last night scores 41 points, takes 40 shots. And I'm going to get to that field goal percentage in just a moment because that's dreadful. James Harden scores 37 points, takes 18 shots. PJ Tucker last night scored 22 points. He took 13 shots. So the idea that Jimmer should be playing in the NBA, and I don't think it's an argument that's going to die anytime soon. Anytime he drops 50 in the Chinese Basketball Association, in the CBA, I see this conversation pop up on social media, be it Twitter or Facebook. And I actually like this argument quite a bit because typically there's two groups of people that care. You have the BYU fans that say he never got a fair chance. Yes, he did. And you have the Ute fans who poke fun at the fact that he did have a chance, he was a lottery pick, and he didn't make it. And you look at the... I'm going to take that shooting percentage for a moment, because again, this was against an NBA team last night. I know there's a million variables that you could throw in here, but if you take a look at the worst field goal percentage in the NBA last year among qualifying players, and you take what Jimmer did last night, taking 40 shots, and that's the way Shanghai plays, I get it, but you got to be more efficient for an argument like this, right? Spencer Dinwiddie had the lowest field goal percentage in the NBA last year. He shot 38% from the field. Jimmer would be 5 spots higher. He would be right next to Allen Crabbe and De'Aaron Fox, who were at 40%. There's no room in the NBA for this guy. And I feel like we have this conversation way more often than we actually should. The reasons why Jimmer is not playing in the NBA. Undersized shooting guard who doesn't play defense and can't dribble. And he went to multiple situations where I thought, okay, Jimmer's going to fit here. Went to San Antonio. You think Greg Popovich is going to get rid of someone that he can use in his system? Patty Mills, who had to leave at one particular time back in the NBA, has been an intricate part to that San Antonio Spurs squad. Haven't had a lot of success, I know, over the last season or so, but we're talking about the San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich, one of the greatest coaches to ever do it. Could not find a spot for Jimmer Fredette. Put him in the backcourt with players like a Jimmy Butler, like a Derrick Rose. But that could be a nice compliment. Didn't work. Put him on a team that's bottom feeder in the Western Conference, Sacramento. Didn't work. And it's simple. An undersized two guard who can't dribble and can't play defense. Now, when you go to the Chinese Basketball Association, you don't play defense. They don't play any defense. That's always a knock on the NBA game, and I always find that interesting because I do watch a lot of FIBA. Defense isn't played at all overseas. In fact, the rules in FIBA are designed to help the offense and hurt the defense. And while that may be the case in the NFL, I don't think that's the case in the NBA. I really don't. The NBA wants a quick game. They want an up and down, right? Jimmer can't play on both sides of the ball, and he's not even that efficient of a shooter. He's really not. So every now and then, we're going to see him go for 50 or 60 or whatever it is in the Chinese Basketball League. Look at the competition he's doing it against. Last night, opportunity for Jimmer, who says he's eyeing an NBA return. He said that for a couple of years. And I'm not putting Jimmer down. I think he's found his niche in the Chinese Basketball Association. It worked. Look, Stephon Marbury did the same thing. Stephon Marbury got a statue because he won a couple of championships in the Chinese Basketball League. There's nothing wrong with that. I've had several players go over there and have success. Ron Artest, who was an NBA champion, had success in China. It's a different kind of basketball, and that's the style of basketball that fits Jimmer. The NBA style does not fit him. Now, with that being said, I was curious about this game last night. I was curious to see how he would look against an NBA team, and we got to see it again. And I'm not foolish. I understand why we're even semi-curious as to what he could do against an NBA roster. It's because of the BYU ties. As I want to make it perfectly clear, I love the argument, and the reason I love the argument is because of the loyalty the state of Utah has for Jimmer. They're so loyal to Jimmer that the first time he went to Vivint Smart Home Arena, the first time he went and played the Jazz, the crowd was sad that he missed a game-winning shot to beat the Jazz. That's how deep the loyalty runs for Jimmer in the state. It's a beautiful thing. It's a great thing. He was a legend at BYU. It worked at BYU. That's a team that should have went to the Final Four, and there are multiple reasons as to why they didn't. But it's okay to admit that he doesn't fit in the NBA game. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back. One last segment coming up on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports. It's right here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Oakland-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year.
It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it! Good! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarino on KOAL 750 AM.
Last segment on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm going to bring in Travis Anderson. Let's move over and talk NFL football. It's a fun conversation yesterday. Had this one by myself. It's always better when I can bounce things off. That's why I'm going to bring Travis in. The craziest division in the NFL is by far the NFC East. We agree on that, right?
Yes.
Thing's a mess, isn't it?
It's not very good.
It's not. No. Through five games, it's not very good. Last week we had Ian O'Connor on the show and we talked about the New England Patriots. And I'm not willing to say that the Patriots are out of the deep end yet. But Travis, they have not played good football over the course of five games. And I want to talk about the AFC East. I think it mirrors the NFC East. Okay, so the Patriots are at 3-2. They are now tied for the division lead with the Dolphins. They have the head-to-head competition after dismantling Miami The Dolphins and the Bills are both hanging around. I guess the Bills are a game out with a minus 55 plus minus differential. But we have one game separating the Patriots all the way down to the Jets. Is the AFC East good, or do the Patriots just play bad to start this season?
I don't think the AFC East is good. I don't think Miami's good. I don't think Buffalo or the Jets are good. So, you know, the Patriots are going to luck out, win that division, and probably get a first-round bye.
Yeah, they very well may. I think the one threat to that, it may actually be the Cincinnati Bengals. I know it's early. I get this. But when I look at the way the Bengals have won football games, I'm convinced that this is one of the better teams that Marvin Lewis has had over the past, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. They beat the Colts handily. They beat the Ravens handily. They lost
the Falcons on the road.
They beat the Falcons on the road. Thank you. And they did take care of the Dolphins at home fairly easy. Now
they came back. Yeah, it was a great game.
It was. I mean, and they have a couple of games coming up in which I think the story will be told with this Bengals team. We'll know within the next 3 weeks how good this team is, because they get the Steelers at home and they get the Chiefs on the road. So we'll know how good this team is. If they have the record of 5-2 after the first 7 games, that might be a threat, because Kansas City's for real. There's no doubt Kansas City is for real. So,
and we'll see them match up with the Patriots Sunday night, and we'll see how those two, and you can see where those two are head-to-head, toe-to-toe.
Yeah, it's a great gauge. AFC East, NFC East, I see a lot of comparisons between the two, because I still believe the Eagles are the cream of the crop in the NFC East. I really do. I'm not buying the Cowboys. And I don't know how much of that you can put on Dak Prescott, just as much as I don't know how much of the Eagles' problems you can put on Carson Wentz. He's still got some rust, you can tell.
They got a must-win tomorrow.
Yeah, they do.
They can't drop to 2-4.
That's a big game. That's a big game. Nobody expects anything out of the Giants. We knew it was a rebuilding season. So expected a lot out of the Eagles. They were supposed to be one of the heavyweights in the NFC. And I talked about this yesterday, and I can get your thoughts on it now that you're here. The NFC appeared to be a gauntlet at the beginning of the season. Through 5 games, it's not a gauntlet. There's the Rams, the Saints, and everyone else.
Yeah, those are your two top dogs, and the Rams are playing San Francisco or Denver this week, and they get a win. They're 6-0. I mean, they're pretty much clear of getting home field throughout. So that's why these NFC teams like Green Bay, Minnesota, the Panthers, the Eagles can't afford to lose, because you just put yourself behind the eight ball with the Rams, who continue to win.
Right, the Rams find ways to win, like they did on Sunday. And I believe the Rams will win again this Sunday as they go on the road to take on the Broncos. So the NFC, again, the East, it's not good. The North, the Bears, can they keep up this pace? I don't know. The Packers, they have Aaron Rodgers. The Vikings, they look better, but the Eagles haven't looked great. The Lions.
Vikings can't stop anybody on defense. Packers riddled with injuries. So Chicago, I mean, their defense is good. It's Trubisky.
But it's not the NFC East.
No.
Because I see teams in the North that I expect to get on track, and it's still early on in the season. Same thing in the South. Look, the Saints are legit. The Panthers have one loss. They haven't lost at home yet, and Cam Newton has played well. The West, we know it's the Rams. The East, I have no idea what to think. And again, if I go to the AFC, it's the same thing. We know the Chiefs are the top dog in the West. You look at the Jaguars, the Titans are going to hang with them, I guess, for a little while, but the Jaguars are still the team to beat out of the South.
Houston was a team I was high on. And they haven't looked good.
Well, they've won their last 2 games. They've found ways to get wins. I think they got to get healthy. There's some injury problems in Houston. But I'm seeing things develop across the board. The East in the AFC, to me, has been a little bit surprising. The Jets started off the year, looked great. Defensively, they were solid. Sam Darnold, I know a lot of people got carried away with Sam Darnold. He didn't play great in that win. He hasn't played great.
No, he's been a rookie.
Exactly. He's been a rookie.
And if the Jets got the Colts Sunday, they win that, they get to 3-3, and the Patriots lose. I mean, the Dolphins, I mean, you're going to have all those teams tied again. So I don't know how good the East is.
I don't either. The Bills, I mean, Josh Allen, at times he looks great, and I think Josh Allen is going to be good. But the Bills continue to win games without scoring points. They've scored 63 points this year.
And they got a winnable game Sunday against Houston, so.
Did you hear what I said? How many points they've
63.
Scored?
63.
Do you know how bad that is?
It's not good. It's
in 5 games, they've scored 63 points. Next would be the Cardinals at 65. After that, you jump all the way into the 80s.
Washington and Dallas.
That's how bad they are. They've scored 20 points less than Washington and Dallas on this season. yet they're 2-3 a game out of first place. So the NFL has had some interesting, fun storylines. Five games into it, I know it's hard to separate pretenders from contenders. We've done that, I think, for the most part in multiple divisions. The AFC West, the NFC West, the NFC South. Carolina is going to hang tight with New Orleans. Tampa Bay came back down to earth. The Falcons, they can't stop a bloody nose. The North, yeah, there's still some questions. But the NFC East, whoever, someone may accidentally win that division. And in the East,
with again, a 9-7, 8-8,
you may accidentally win that game. You may accidentally win that that division. Excuse me.
I'll still take Philadelphia because I trust them more than the others, but they haven't looked good.
Out of time on this edition of the show. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.